Now, making a will, as I said, not something everybody apparently should do, but not many want to consider. And others may be of the opinion that because of their family and or financial situation, they don't need to make a will. So what should you do and how easy is it to make a will? We're joined in studio by Christopher Callan of Callan Tansey Solicitors in Sligo. Christopher, good morning to you and welcome. Welcome along to the programme.
Good morning, Niall.
And as I say, not something that people really want to face up to. Not a nice thing to talk about to some degree, but very, very important.
It's very important, Niall. I think perhaps a lot of people think that in making a will in some way they are facing up to their own mortality.
Yeah.
But in reality, you know, your will also is an opportunity to take stock. In reality, if you're over 18 and you have assets, responsibilities, perhaps family, it's very important to consider making a will.
Okay. Now, some people would say they don't have any assets, they've no money. But assets mean more than that, obviously.
Well, it could be property, it could be a house, it could be land. You know, it could be an insurance policy that encashes on one's death. There are many assets, is a very broad term. It can cover all kinds of property.
So the rule of thumb would be if you're over 18, you really should consider making a will. Now, this will be, of course, alien to younger people, but for various reasons, it is important that people consider this.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think you know, when perhaps a person gets married, they have children, there are circumstances then and responsibilities that a person has where they need to consider, well, what happens if I'm not here?
Yeah.
Or what happens, for example, if we're both as parents not here? We have young children, who will be their guardians? Who will look after them? How will their interests be protected? So those particular issues as well can be covered in a will.
Okay. So how do you go about making a will?
Well, at the first thing, I think the thing is that a will should be made with the benefit of proper advice. Somebody who has experience and is skilled in making a will and who can advise you as to the various factors that you need to consider. That person is a solicitor. And a solicitor with experience in this area will know how to advise the particular client that's in front of them properly, having regard to their particular interests, having regard to their circumstances, their responsibilities. So when you're making a will, there are a few things you probably should consider. What would you like to happen in the event of your death? Because if you don't have a will, what will happen will be determined by course of law.
Yeah, and I'll come back to that in a moment because that's an interesting point. Okay, what else then? What other reasons would they have?
The solicitor should obviously take full instructions, ascertain what are your circumstances, family, to whom do you have obligations, either legal or moral. What are the potential tax implications of what you're thinking of doing? And can, let's say, possible adverse tax liabilities be reduced by making sure that the will is appropriately drafted?
Okay. And you can seek advice in all that because there are a number of questions coming in relation to that already. But you can seek advice on that.
Absolutely. And your solicitor is effectively a trusted advisor and has an obligation to take the time to ensure that you understand what you're doing. In order to make a will, a person should be over 18 and they should have what we call testamentary capacity. And this is an issue that's becoming ever more important now as people are living longer. We have conditions such as dementia and Alzheimer's disease, which in the early stages will not prevent a person making a will. But it does mean that the solicitor has to take extreme care to ensure that that person understands what they're doing and that when the will is being proven after the person passes away in due course or in the fullness of time, that that will can be actually proven.
All right, OK. You mentioned legal implications. So I presume you have come across cases where people haven't left wills and it can get a bit messy in occasions, can't it?
Well, if you pass away and you're married with infant children and you have assets or property and you don't have a will, all of your property will pass as to 2/3 to your surviving spouse, or if it's a civil partner, your surviving civil partner, and as to 1/3 between your infant children. So that obviously creates a problem because your children can't, they don't have legal capacity. So therefore, and it creates a problem for your surviving spouse. So when it comes then to advising a person when they're making a will, so the first, generally, the first person you say you must look after, you must consider, is your surviving spouse, to ensure that they can manage the affairs with the in the best interest of the family after your time.
Okay. There's a number of questions coming in. I'll get to them very shortly. But does it take long to make a will? Is it not a complicated process?
It's not that complicated. It depends on the circumstances, obviously. But generally, I have a rule of thumb that it's two visits. That you have the initial visit to take instructions, to get a sense of the person, to gather whatever information you feel is necessary. Then you prepare your draft will, and then you meet the person subsequently to go through the draft will and then get it signed.
All right. Okay. We go to a few questions. Is that okay?
Sure.
This person wants to know, can you state in your will to leave a monetary allowance every week or month to a relative instead of leaving a lump sum?
Yes, as it were, an annuity as such. Yes, you can do that. So, for instance, you could, what's a common enough provision in a will is that you leave, let's say, a farm of land to perhaps a child,
yeah,
subject to a provision that the surviving parent is provided for out of those lands. So that may be an unspecified amount, but there's provision there that the surviving other parent is provided for on an ongoing basis out of the income which is derived out of those lands.
All right, okay. This person is a single man. I own my own house. I don't have any children. So if anything happens to me and I haven't made a will, what happens to Mike? Is this something like, and again, this is I suppose the case with many people, something I just never got round to as this person.
Okay, that's actually common enough in Ireland, where a person is a single person, they have no spouse or children. Then if they die without making a will, their property passes to their next of kin. So that would be brothers and sisters alive and children of any predeceased brothers or sisters. If they have a surviving parent, if there's a parent alive, then the parent will take first, obviously. But if there's no parent, if their parents are deceased, then it's brothers and sisters and children take of predeceased brothers and sisters.
Okay, but that person really should be advised to make their will.
Absolutely, because, again, you know, there could be somebody who is a nephew or who is a brother or sister who is involved in their, as it were, world, and perhaps they need to be dealt with differently to the others in the family.
Yeah.
It's very important for that person to make a will, and in making the will then they can perhaps arrange to minimise any potential tax implications that would otherwise arise.
Okay, this person wants to know, Christopher, could you or should you include bank accounts in your will?
Well, you can include bank accounts. Your will effectively should deal with all of your assets.
Yeah.
So if you want to specifically deal with any asset, then you can do so, be it a house, be it land, or be it a bank account. But at the end of every will, there is what's called a residue clause, which captures any assets that you haven't specifically dealt with beforehand.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Niall, can you ask Christopher about power of attorney, ward of court? It's vital that all people have one in place where a person is not able to make decisions and no family member has been appointed to do so.
Very appropriate question, good question, and very relevant nowadays. Again, touching on that area of dementia or incapacity when a person finds themselves in a situation where they can't or don't have the capacity to take care of their own affairs. To anticipate that kind of situation, you can put in place what's called an enduring power of attorney.
Yeah.
And that's a document which appoints at least one, but in my view it should be really two people, to act as your attorneys in the event of you becoming at some point in the future incapable of managing your affairs. There's a process around putting in place or creating that document whereby you obviously sign it. One part of it sets out what powers you give to those people and what your wishes are. Then you must notify two other people who are not the attorneys of the fact that you have created this document. You must have your doctor certify that you're competent to sign the document,
mm-hmm,
and the solicitor must certify that he has explained the implications of the document to you. And your attorneys must also acknowledge that they will and are prepared to act in due course. So that document then, while you have your capacity and while you are capable of looking after your affairs, is simply filed away. But if, for instance, you suffered a stroke or you became subject to such a severe dementia so you couldn't manage your affairs, that document then can be registered by your attorneys in the High Court. And once it's registered, then they then can proceed and manage your affairs.
All right, okay.
There's one point in relation to enduring powers of attorney that's important to bear in mind, and that is that if you've made a will leaving certain assets to certain people, and at the same time you've created an enduring power of attorney, you need to be sure that your attorneys don't do things during your incapacity which might defeat the objects as set out in your will. It's important that the two documents are aligned, or at least that the person executing the enduring power of attorney understands that that's a possibility.
Okay, you mentioned the tax implications earlier, Christopher, and somebody wants to know, is there any way you can structure your will that will minimise inheritance tax?
Now,
we're talking legally, of course, here, obviously.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah, you can, of course. So for instance, beneficiaries under a will, depending on their relationship to you, the testator, have a certain tax-free threshold. And if the value of what you're getting exceeds that threshold, then you'll pay tax on the excess of the value of the inheritance over the threshold. So what you can do, perhaps, if you're thinking of benefiting one particular person and they would pay tax ordinarily on what they're getting, you could suggest perhaps to the testator, well, you know, if you benefit that person's wife and their children as well, they each have tax-free thresholds too. So by doing that, you can spread the benefit throughout that particular family, use their available tax-free thresholds, and thus reduce the tax.
Okay, and
there are other ways as well.
And that's where the legal advice comes in as important. Okay, a couple more before and the most important question of all is how much does it cost, which we'll come to in a moment. A couple more questions. I'm a single mom with four kids. The father of the kids is not involved in their lives. He's not living in Ireland at the moment. When I make my will, can I will what I want to my kids to my partner or friend, or will their father be responsible? Does that make sense? It does.
Yeah.
Again, pretty common.
Your will can benefit whoever you wish, and obviously your children would be first and foremost in your mind. As to whether or not the father of the children is your spouse, or is perhaps or was a cohabiting partner, will determine whether or not they have the possibility also of exerting legal rights as against your estate. So that particular point needs to be considered.
Yeah. You've possibly answered this one already, but somebody wants to know what happens in the case of a widow who dies without a will and who has three adult children.
Well, in that situation, it would seem that the three adult children inherit the widow's estate equally as between them.
Yeah, okay.
In undivided shares.
All right, okay. How much does it cost, Christopher? Lots of people wanting to know that. Again, people have busy lives and they want to know how quickly can they do it and how much does it cost?
Okay, well, I think I've answered the second question first. I think, you know, a will should take perhaps two visits. Yeah. Obviously, there are occasions where it's necessary to do it immediately. But I think two visits should do it. In terms of cost, I don't think that cost should really be an issue in making a will. I think it's one of those services that solicitors should be providing without cost being an issue. Now, that's to say that if a person has difficulty in paying for it, that's a consideration that should be taken into effect, and it shouldn't prevent them making a will.
It's not an exorbitant amount of money.
No. I mean, I would say wills are being made fermenting from sort of 60, 70 euro up to maybe 150, 200 euros plus VAT. And then that's obviously a generalisation, because some wills can be very complex and some wills can be simple. I don't think that cost should be a barrier to somebody making a will.
All right, okay. So your advice would be for those who haven't done so over the age of 18 to do so, to consider doing so. It's very important.
Yes, and to take advice before making a will. So when you make a will, you want to ensure and be sure that, you know, if and when the time comes, well, not if, but when a person passes away, that the will stand up. I've had quite a number of examples of wills that have been made, as it were, homemade wills, where on examination of the will by the probate office, they simply haven't stood up. Because they weren't witnessed appropriately, or some technical requirement hasn't been complied with.
I mean, we'll have to come back to this, I think, Christopher, some other. There's loads of questions coming in. People wanting to know what's the purpose in a will at all if it could be contested by a member of the family. Someone else wants to know can anyone get a copy of a will even if you're not a beneficiary. It goes on and on.
In relation to getting a copy of the will, when a person passes away, it's the executor who is named in the will has the responsibility to carry out the wishes of the deceased. And that person will decide who gets copies or who doesn't. But primarily, nobody as such is entitled to a copy. People are entitled to know what their benefit is in the will. But again, unless there's a reason not to furnish a copy of a will to a family, the will should be furnished. Now, when the will is proven, in other words, when you've gone through the process and it's been admitted to probate, then it becomes a document of public record. So then it's open to everybody who wants to get a copy of that will can if they wish.
Okay. And then very finally, somebody says, you should be asking Christopher about Euro 88 and not about wills. Were you there in Euro 88?
Last Sunday, I think, was the 28th anniversary of our victory.
And you were there, right?
I was.
In Stuttgart.
I'm sure you know Frank Feehan in Boyle TD.
Senator now.
Frank, in those days, was a tremendous man to organise community events and stuff. So Frank organised a trip for
a
group of us.
He put the whip on you, did he?
20 of us. We hired a double-decker bus from Top Deck Travel out of London, met it in Le Havre, and drove around Europe following the boys in green. And it was just a wonderful experience.
OK, those were the days. OK, no double-decker bus in Francis this year, Christopher, no?
No, I'm afraid, maybe in a few years' time.
When you get more time.
Yeah.
Christopher O'Callaghan, many thanks for joining us in studio this morning. There's huge interest, I have to tell you, in the process of making a will, and maybe we'll get Christopher back in to talk about more aspects of it. Christopher O'Callaghan there of Callaghan Hansey Solicitors in Sligo. Thanks very much, Christopher,
Thank
for
you,
joining
Niall.
us.